this dinner is not just another dinner. This evening is not just another evening. This evening is a very special evening to God. This evening is a night to be much observed. So today, as we approach the spring holy days, I want to take a break from the ABC of scattering, and we'll come back to that in actually a couple of months' time now. And in this sermon, I want to discuss with you the five W's of the night to be much observed. The why, the when, the who, the where, and the what of the night to be much observed. And I've also added one H, and that is the how. The how. So let's start with our first question, which is why? Why do we keep this observance? Most people outside the Church of God have never even heard of the night to be much observed, or as we used to call it, the night to be much remembered, and that's fine too. But it's clearly commanded as an important part of the Feast of Unleavened Bread activities. Well, let's go back to Exodus chapter 12, and let's set the stage by reviewing the amazing events of the night before, the first Passover night, and then we'll go into the first night to be much observed. So Exodus chapter 12, please. Exodus chapter 12. And we'll begin in verse 29, Exodus 12, 29. And it came to pass that at midnight, okay, so this is during the night of Abib 14, at midnight the Lord smote all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sat on his throne, unto the firstborn of the captive that was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of cattle. And Pharaoh rose up in the night, and this is still the 14th now, he and all his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. And he, Pharaoh, called for Moses and Aaron by night, still on the 14th, and said, rise up and get you forth from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you have said. Now, it's kind of interesting because back in verse 22, the Lord had told Moses and Aaron, none of you shall go out at the door of his house until the morning. So there's a couple of possibilities here. Maybe Moses and Aaron didn't actually go to Pharaoh until the morning. They were summoned by night. Maybe they didn't go until the morning. Or maybe the Lord gave them special permission. We're not sure of that. But anyway, verse 32, and also take your flocks and your herds as you have said, and be gone, and bless me also. That was kind of interesting that he asked him. He was probably so scared that he was asking for a blessing on himself too. And the Egyptians were urgent upon the people, on the Israelites, obviously, that they might send them out of the land in haste, for they said, we be all dead men. Well, next, and this was definitely after the sun was up, and so this was in the daytime portion of Abib 14, verse 35, and the children of Israel did according to the word of Moses, and they borrowed, or asked, or requested of the Egyptians, jewels of silver, and jewels of gold, and raiment. And the Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they lent, and they gave what was requested unto them, such things as they required, and they despoiled the Egyptians. The Israelites despoiled the Egyptians. And then next, after sunset, now into into Abib 15, verse 37, and the children of Israel journeyed from Ramesses to Succoth, about 600,000 on foot that were men, beside children. And a mixed multitude went up also with them, and flocks and herds, even very much cattle. Verse 40, Verse 14, now the sojourning of the children, this is kind of interesting, the sojourning of the children of Israel who dwelt in Egypt was 430 years. And it came to pass at the end of the 430 years, even the selfsame day, actually the night, it came to pass that all the hosts of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. Now, when we read these two verses, 40 and 41, the English grammar reads as though the Israelites were in Egypt for 430 years. There's some disagreement with that. Different translations add in that, or I won't go into all of the detail of that, but there's disagreement amongst various translators and Hebrew scholars about this, because the math does not add up. The math of the seers, the years rather, and the patriarchs' lifetimes, it just doesn't add up to 430 years. So many scholars feel that 430 years of sojourning actually began with Abraham's call and includes the time that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were wandering in various places of Canaan. Okay, that's a different subject, and that's for another day. We'll get into that. Okay, let's repeat verse 41 there. And it came to pass at the end of the 430 years, even the selfsame day or night, it came to pass that all the hosts of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. And I say again, night, yes, definitely night. Please, if you have a bookmark, bookmark that, Exodus 12, and let's just I want to just one verse in Deuteronomy chapter 16, please. We're going to come right back to Exodus 12, but Deuteronomy 16, there it is, Deuteronomy 16 and verse 1. Deuteronomy 16 verse 1, observe the month Abib and keep the Passover unto the Lord your God, for in the month of Abib the Lord your God brought you forth out of Egypt by night. By night. Okay, back to Exodus chapter 12 and verse 42. It is a night to be much observed unto the Lord, brethren, for bringing them out from the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord to be observed of all the children of Israel in their generations. It was the night that the Lord brought them out of the land of Egypt. So let's just recap here. On Passover night, Abib 14, Pharaoh sent for Moses and Aaron. He told them and all the other Israelites to take the sheep and their cattle and to leave Egypt, as they'd previously requested and repeatedly been denied. The Egyptian people were anxious to get the Israelites on their way as soon as possible because they feared that they all would have been wiped out, that God would have wiped out all of the Egyptians if the Israelites weren't freed immediately. In the daytime portion of Abib 14, according to Moses' instructions, the Israelites demanded silver, gold, and clothing, and God caused the Egyptians to give the Israelites all that they'd asked for. They weren't stealing, the Israelites weren't stealing from them. You have to remember they'd been in Egypt for many, many years of slavery, and this was payback time. Now, there's some when it uses that word that they despoiled the Egyptians, some scholars believe that on top of the 10 plagues, this despoiling of the Egyptians actually brought financial ruin to the nation of Egypt for a long time afterwards. So, the night beginning Abib 15 is when the Exodus began. the Israelites, 600,000 men, plus women and children, and many sheep and cattle, left Egypt. And it also says that a mixed multitude travelled with them as well. Now, we don't really know who they were, but perhaps they were a lot. When it says multitude, you can bet your bottom dollar that it was a lot of people. So perhaps a large group of non-Israelites of various nationalities. Perhaps they were also slaves, they had been slaves, and who had gained their freedom. And perhaps even some Egyptians who'd recognize the benefit of Israel having the true God on their side. And there wasn't much doubt about that when they'd seen all that God had done for the Israelites. Anyway, so after a long time of slavery, the Israelites left Egypt. They travelled from Goshen and Ramesses towards a place called Sukkoth. And they did that starting on this special night, this night of the beginning of Abib 15. So this was the special night when the mighty God freed the Israelites from their bondage in Egypt. And that night is a night to be much observed, it says, to the Lord. So we need to remember that this night to be much observed is God's night. It's not man's night. And please note also that this extra special night is to be observed by Israelites throughout their generations, and that means forever. I'm not going to read them right now, but you can also see verses 14, 17 and 24 forever. So we ask the question then, why do we in God's church, New Testament church, keep the night to be much observed? Well, obviously the main reason that we keep it is because God commands it. But everything that God commands is for good reason. Sometimes he doesn't always tell us the reason right up front, but it's always for a good reason, and virtually always for the benefit of mankind, and especially for his people. So for New Testament Christians then, what is the good reason or the good reasons for this night to be much observed command? Despite our physical nationalities, we have all been made spiritual Israelites. And for Israel, this observance is commanded forever. Please turn over to chapter 13 of Exodus. And what we see here is that the reasons for the night to be much observed are bound up in the reasons for the Feast of Unleavened Bread generally. Exodus chapter 13 and verse 3. And Moses said unto the people, remember this day in which you came out from Egypt and out of the house of bondage, for by strength of hand the Lord brought you out from this place. There shall be no leavened bread be eaten. Verse 4, this day, or this night actually, came you out in the month Abib. So God told the Israelites through Moses to remember this day on which they came out of bondage in Egypt, and he told them that it was by God's strength that they were freed. Verse 8, and you shall show your son and your daughters too, obviously, in that day, saying, this is done because of that which the Lord did unto me when I came forth out of Egypt. And it shall be for a sign unto you upon your hand, and for memorial between your eyes, that the Lord's law may be in your mouth. And we're not talking about these silly physical phylacteries on our wrists or our foreheads, but it's talking about keeping his laws in our minds, in our thoughts, in our words, and in our deeds. For with a strong hand has the Lord brought you out of Egypt, and shall therefore You shall therefore keep this ordinance in his season from year to year. So this is in his season. This is in the Lord's season. It's not man's season. It's not even the Jews' season. Especially if and when their timing is wrong, which it so often is. But it says also here, and we're going to come back to this again, we're to teach our children and our grandchildren that these things are to be done, and that these days and these nights are to be kept, because of how God brought his Old Testament people out of physical Egypt through great miracles, but more importantly for us, how he brought his New Testament people out of spiritual Egypt, again by great miracles. The Feast of Unleavened Bread and the Night to be Much Observed are visible signs that we are keepers and preachers of God's law. The Feast of Unleavened Bread and the Night to be Much Observed are reminders that these things were done by his great strength. So all of the glory has to go to him. And for these reasons, God's people are to keep these ordinances every year at the commanded time. Now Herbert W. Armstrong used to advise the brethren when we have our Night to be Much Observed dinners not to sermonize. And that's good, that's okay. But this clearly is an evening when we should be reflecting on the vastly important events that happened on that night. Again, both in the Old Testament, when God freed physical Israel from physical Egypt, and in New Testament, when God freed spiritual Israel from spiritual Egypt. At the very beginning of the New Testament, Jesus had been crucified and entombed by the sunset, which ended Abib 14. And we need to really think about this. We often think about the Old Testament activities of this day, but for us we need to concentrate on the New Testament, what happened, and that night to be much observed, which began Abib 15 that year, was the first night in the whole of eternity that our Lord, our Messiah, our Creator, was not alive. And that's hard for us to get our minds around. It's hard for us to comprehend. But on that night, for the first time ever, a member of the God family was dead. Was dead. So please think about that, brother. We're going to come back, going to bring that point back again later on. So that is why we keep the night to be much observed. Okay, second question is when? When? Again, we've already touched on this, but when should we be keeping this night to be much observed? Let's repeat Exodus chapter 12 and verse 42. It is a night to be much observed unto the Lord for bringing them out from the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord to be observed of all the children of Israel in their generations. So the Lord God tells us that it should be kept on the same night that Israel was freed from Egypt. Which night was that? Let's go over to Numbers now, please, brethren. Numbers. Numbers chapter 33. Numbers chapter 33. And verse 3. And they departed from Ramesses in the first month, on the 15th day of the first month. On the morrow after the Passover, the children of Israel went out with a high hand in the sight of all the Egyptians. Let's get our timing straight here then. Passover day is the 14th of Abib. Passover night is the beginning of the 14th of Abib. And Exodus chapter 12 verse 22 says that the Israelites were to remain indoors on that night. Okay. The morrow after Passover day is Abib 15. And the morrow night after Passover day is the beginning of the 15th of the month, Abib. Okay. So once we get that straight, the Israelites left Ramesses, it says here, displaying victory and rejoicing, you can imagine, before their former captors on the night beginning the 15th day of Abib. And that is one of the months, of the first month of God's sacred calendar, which we're going to be beginning in a couple of days' time. Okay, another question under the heading of when is, when should the night to be much observed dinner begin? Now, it's absolutely necessary that the Passover service not begin until after sunset, beginning Abib 14. That's very important. But should it be the same for the night to be much observed dinner? And this is my own opinion, but I say no, I don't think it is. I believe that as long as the dinner runs past the sunset and on into the 15th, then it's acceptable to begin the dinner before the sunset. The sunset on in our Nanus location this year on April the 20th is quite late this year. It's 8:18 p.m. and it's even much later as we go north, much later in other locations further north than ours. So if we didn't begin the night to be much observed dinner until after sunset, it'd make for an uncomfortably late night, and we really need to have a comfortable night with the holy day the following day. Okay. The next question then is, our third question is, where should the night to be much observed be observed? Okay, so we're strongly commanded to keep the night to be much observed. We've seen that, and we're clearly commanded when to keep it, but there's no specific instruction as to where it should be kept. Go all the way back to the Israelites again, the first observers of the night to be much observed. They kept some of the evening in their homes in the preparation for their departure out of Egypt, and they spent some of the evening, as we know, on the road out of Egypt. From my understanding, that when Herbert Armstrong first realized that New Testament Christians should be keeping the night to be much observed, that he recommended that it be kept in our homes, usually with another family or more brethren. And this is what most Church of God families have done throughout the years since then. I remember a few years in Worldwide Church of God when we had large congregations, and including ours in Victoria, where we kept the night to be much observed all together at various large halls or restaurants. And it's not for me to judge those who continue that practice, but we, as a family anyway, have chosen not to, for a couple of reasons. Partially because we don't wish to transact business on one of God's annual Sabbath days, but also because in such large groups there's too much danger of turning this very special night into just another dinner. And I've seen that. We've experienced that in the past, and this night is too special to allow that to happen. Okay, question number four. Who? Like an owl. There's actually two questions that arise here. Who should attend the night to be much observed dinners? And also, in the case of larger Church of God congregations, which is the exception rather than the rule these days, it seems, if we're hosting, who should we invite? Now, I'm not going to get into that part of it in too much detail. I'll concentrate more on the first one, because as far as I know, we don't have many regular listeners to our broadcast in the larger groups or congregations, maybe none at all, I don't know. But still, again, speaking to the people out on internet land there, if you do attend with a large congregation, and if you would like to have some information on this, please either write to me or phone me, or refer to the upcoming transcript of this message, and I'll put that information in there. And I don't consider myself to be a night to be much observed expert or anything like that. But back in our years in Worldwide Church of God, I was given the job every year of making sure that all the brethren in our congregation, we had over 320, 330 in our congregation, we had to make sure that they were all looked after and that they weren't sitting alone on this special evening. So let's concentrate on the other question. Who should attend the night to be much observed dinners? Obviously, all of us who are able to attend Sabbath services regularly should not have any trouble attending. Some who have health problems, if you've got a transportation problem, that could, again, that could be a problem. And only if they feel up to it. If there's a choice between, and I've seen this in the past too, there where if there's a choice between, I can't do the both of them, I can't attend the night and the first day of unleavened bread on the following day. If there's a choice between that, then I would say that the first day of unleavened bread is probably the priority. But unless absolutely necessary and unavoidable, it's not advisable to spend the night to be much observed alone or even just with our own family. If it's necessary, yeah. If it's avoidable, no. As it is such a very special occasion, sharing it with at least one other family makes it much more special. Now, over the years, the Churches of God have gone backwards and forwards whether it's okay to invite non-member family members, non-church member family members to the night to be much observed dinners. And as I believe it stands today in most Church of God groups, I believe that non-member family members are to be welcomed, and that comes with some obvious reservations and exceptions to avoid any unpleasantness. I have a memory, a dim memory, it's true, of one disastrous occasion in a distant past. I don't know whether Trish can remember it, in our Worldwide Church of God years, when the wife of a visiting member was very contrary, very argumentative, and didn't like the church at all, and she attended our night to be much observed gathering, and it turned out to be quite unpleasant from my memory of that. But a member whose spouse or again other family member who doesn't attend church services regularly, the member is usually the best judge as to whether the family member would be comfortable at such a gathering, but also whether the brethren would be comfortable with him or her there. Now, I've already said that, what Herbert Armstrong said, that there should not be any sermonizing at the night to be much observed dinners, but still the conversation, there will be conversation on spiritual subjects. Those conversations may well arise, and quite rightly so, you know, because of the purpose, because of the reason of that evening. We'll come back to that later. And we certainly should take the comfort and sensitivities of any non-member guests into consideration in our conversations, but not to the detriment of the extra special nature and the spiritual purpose and the conversation of this evening. And, you know, to repeat, it's up to the church member to discuss this with his or her non-member spouse or family member well in advance, in order to spare him or her and all the brethren any unnecessary embarrassment or discomfort. Okay. Fifth question is what? What can each of us do to contribute to making this year's night to be much observed the extra special evening that God meant it to be? Okay. And I ask you to think, to plan, and to be creative. And let's get busy and help the hosts as much as we can. I know that here in on the island here and in the Noose in our gathering that everybody's going to, you know, muck in and get involved in that. But please remember that we've all have been busy by that time. We'll all have been busy de-leavening and other preparations. So I ask you, please do not, and you know, I'm not just talking to our local brethren here, but to those people out on the internet. Please do not allow the host to provide the whole meal and all of the cleanup as well. Please insist on an equitable sharing of the costs and the preparation of the meal and of the cleanup afterwards. The night to be observed, it should not be too late a night, because we all need a good night's rest to get ourselves ready for the first day of unleavened bread service the following day. And men, this includes us too. Why, I'm talking to the men now, why should, I know you like to have the luxury of, you've been watching Downton Abbey, and that you like the luxury of going into the library, retiring to the library with your brandy and cigars and also spiritual conversation, joking of course, and leaving the ladies to do all the cleanup. No, please remember that in many or most cases the ladies will have done most of the work in the preparation of the meal. So the least we guys can do is to help with the cleanup. So men, let's roll up our sleeves, not right now, roll up our sleeves and get stuck in on the night to be much observed. Okay, so that's it for the five W's, but please allow me now to add an H to those five W's, the how. How should the night to be much observed be observed? How should it be kept? In the years since the collapse of the Worldwide Church of God, some, including some of the detractors of the memory of Herbert W. Armstrong and his sincere efforts in the restoring of the truth to the Church of God, some people have questioned and criticized the idea that a dinner is even necessary on the night to be much observed, and that to say so is extra biblical or even unscriptural. Some have even ridiculed the teaching and the keeping of the night to be much observed itself. It is, some have called it Armstrong's folly. Now, I'm not saying that I believe that everything that Herbert W. Armstrong did or said or preached was 100% correct. I know that he did err in some areas, but who hasn't, brethren, including his detractors? However, I do believe that for the most part, that for the best of his knowledge and his ability, that Herbert Armstrong did strive to go over and above the call of duty. And as in the case with the annual keeping of the Night to be Much Observed and its quote-unquote traditional dinner, traditional to us at least, it is true that no scriptural command, or that there is no scriptural command to hold a dinner on the Night to be Much Observed. That's true. The only references to food in the new in the Night to be Much Observed verses are these. Let's go back to Exodus 12, please. Exodus chapter 12. I know you're familiar with these. And verse 34. Exodus chapter 12 and verse 34. And the people took their dough before it was leavened, their kneading troughs being bound up in their clothes upon their shoulders. Jump down to verse 39. And they baked unleavened cakes of the dough which they brought forth out of Egypt, for it was not leavened, because they were thrust out of Egypt and could not tarry, neither had they prepared for themselves any victual. So all they had apparently was just a pile of unleavened cakes, which is not much of a holy day meal, of course. But okay, let's look at the converse. Is it wrong for us to hold dinners on the Night to be Much Observed? And was it wrong for Herbert Armstrong to institute the tradition of Night to be Much Observed dinners? I would answer no to both questions. It is true that we are not to add to nor subtract from God's instructions in a wrong way. But in the modern Church of God, some extra biblical decisions have to be made. Here's an example. Do we know exactly how Jesus and the disciples and the early church groups conducted their Sabbath services? Well, no, we don't. So, lacking that detailed information, most Church of God groups in our modern era have come to their own decisions, extra biblical decisions, as to how best to conduct church services. Likewise, the Lord told us to observe this ultra important night that begins Abib 15, but he did not tell us exactly how to observe it. Should we just go out on that night, or on that evening, should we just go out and observe the sun as it goes down in the west? And then should we observe the full moon and the stars as they come up? Or should we observe the evening by having a Bible study, either on our own or with local brethren? I'm sure that there's absolutely nothing wrong with either of those two choices. But the Night to be Much Observed is an integral part of the first day of unleavened bread. It is one of God's feast days. So is it wrong then, on this feast day of God, is it wrong for God's people to feast on this feast day? Is it wrong to feast twice on this feast day, once at the beginning during its nighttime period and once during its daytime period? We know it's not wrong. We know it's not wrong. In fact, it's quite acceptable, especially if it's done in the right spirit, and again, not as just another dinner. We've all been given free moral agency. That's another of Mr. Armstrong's phrases, free moral agency. So if any member wishes to observe this night in some other manner, you know, which would be an acceptable manner to God, he's totally free to do so, and we're not going to judge them. You don't have to turn there, but you know that one of my favorite scriptures is Colossians chapter 2 and verse 16. Let no man therefore judge you in meat or in drink or in respect of a holy day, as this is, or of the new moon or of the Sabbath days. But if we decline attendance at a local or our local night to be much observed dinner, if we do that in order to observe it in another way, there is a danger that we might, I can't think of a good phrase for it, slough off the evening as something that isn't special. But it is special. We've seen that already. It's very special. And if done properly, our night to be much observed dinners bring the brethren together unto the Lord. Exodus chapter 12 verse 42. Unto the Lord. In the spirit of thankfulness, rejoicing and praise for all that happened on this night, the special night, and especially in Jesus' New Testament fulfillment of it. Okay, what else? What else under the subheading of how should the night to be much observed be kept? I believe that it is very important for us to remember these two things. First of all, that the night to be much observed evening begins a Sabbath, a holy day. It's the first holy day of the sacred year, and it's special just because of that. And secondly, that in our rejoicing, in our understandable rejoicing, that we have been freed from Egypt, that we should also remember the vast importance and the solemnity of what happened on this night approximately 1,985 years ago. Repeating what I said earlier, Jesus had just been laid in his tomb as the sun set. Says that it was a day of preparation. It was a day of preparation for the night to be much observed and the first day of unleavened bread. Jesus had just been laid in his tomb, and for the first time in all eternity, a God family member was dead. He wasn't preaching to the spirits in prison, or he wasn't in purgatory, as some believe. He was dead. He was inactive. He was out of the picture for 3 days and three nights. For God the Father and the holy angels, just that short 72-hour period must have seemed like an eternity. And can you imagine what might have happened to the world, what Satan might have done, if God the Father and the holy angels had not been around keeping the lid on things for those 72 hours. Now it's true that Jesus died so that you and I might have our sins washed away, and that certainly is good cause for great rejoicing. And yes, it is the beginning of a feast day, and we certainly should enjoy ourselves. But still, the night to be much observed is not a night for partying. It's not a night for partying. And it's interesting to read up on the pre-Passover dinners that are mentioned in the 1 Corinthians 11. We're going to play a message in a couple of weeks' time to talk about that. That our rejoicing should not be like that of the world, with greed, with selfishness, with gluttony, and with the excess of noise and the excess of alcohol. Another recommendation from the late Herbert Armstrong, was that during our night to be much observed dinners, that it's a good idea to go around the table and to give each member or member couple the opportunity to rehearse their individually miraculous circumstances that led to their being called into the Church of God and to be freed from Egypt and of the sin of the world. You know, if we have the same bunch of brethren year after year after year and we do this, it might get a bit old hat. But, you know, as it is, you know, when we're getting together with different brethren this year who perhaps we haven't spent night to be much observed with in previous years, it's a good thing to do. It draws us closer, you know, it helps us understand one another, where we are coming from, where we came from. Okay, what about the children? What about the children? The scriptures reveal that our children and our grandchildren should be encouraged to participate in the night to be much observed and in the Feast of Unleavened Bread celebrations, obviously in appropriate ways. Let's go again to repeat Exodus chapter 13 and verse 8. Exodus chapter 13 and verse 8. And you shall show your son in that day, and I think son is just the word for child. You shall show your child, and obviously daughters are included in that day, saying, this is done because of that which the Lord did unto me when I came forth out of Egypt. Verse 9, and it shall be for a sign unto you upon your hand and for a memorial between your eyes, that the Lord's law may be in your mouth. For with a strong hand has the Lord brought you out of Egypt. You shall therefore keep this ordinance in a season from year to year. So important is this to the Lord, this teaching of our children, that, you know, certainly about what happened here, that he repeated it just a few verses further down, verse 14. And it shall be when your son, and I'll add daughter as well, asks you in time to come, saying, what is this? That you shall say unto him, by strength of hand the Lord brought us out from Egypt, from the house of bondage. And again, when we're explaining that to our children and grandchildren, we're talking about the New Testament version of that. Skip over verse 15 right there. We want to come back to it in big detail during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Let's go to verse 16. And it shall be for a token upon your hand and for the frontlets between your eyes, for by strength of hand the Lord brought us forth out of Egypt. And this is just a suggestion. I was reading through the accounts of Joseph the other day in the scriptures when he was playing those little tricks on his on his brothers when they came back and they didn't know who he was, and he actually he had them all lined up in age order going down there. See, we could emulate that, and we could seat our guests in approximate age order without asking anybody their age, of course, with the oldest at one end of the table and the youngest at the other end. And again, as you know, again talking to those out on the internet, as long as the younger children don't need constant supervision, obviously. But this way, each guest will likely be sitting next to someone with whom he or she shares common interests. So, again, just a suggestion. It's up to the parents. But again, I believe that our children should as well listen respectfully to, at least maybe not all of them, but you know, if we do have those conversion accounts at around the table being related by the adults, I think it's a good idea, and it's good training and knowledge for the children about what we've come out of and what led to our conversion. So that's it, brethren. That's it, and there they are, the 5 W's and the 1 H of the night to be much observed. The why, the when, the where, the who, the what, and the how. And I sincerely hope and pray that this year that all of you will have an extra special night to be much observed. But please remember, if you don't remember anything else, this is not just another dinner. This is not just another night.